We're back into our series on Matthew's Gospel, and we're into Matthew chapter 14, and we're into one of the most famous miracle stories, which, as I start it and as I go through it, maybe like myself, you might think, oh, well, I've seen that so many times, and could there be anything new about it, or, you know, same old, same old? Actually, there's lots of really beautiful stuff in this. But before I get to that, let me go first of all, let me ask you a few brief questions. Let me just show you this briefly. Right. I want you to think of someone you know reasonably well. Now, it could be you, but I'm also aware that there are quite a few people for whom this might be quite a triggering experience. So if you want a bit of distance, maybe think of two or three people that you know reasonably well. There might be someone you live with, might be someone that you work with, might be someone you're married to, who knows, okay? But just have a think about them. And I want you to ask yourself this question, okay, where would this person fit on this scale? So at the top, you've got someone who's fully contented, who is really very happy with the way things are going. And then at the other end, you've got someone who's utterly bereft. There's an emptiness, there's a complete gnawing vacuum in their life, and it's pretty dark. It's no joking matter, even though I make light of most things. There's no joking matter about that. It's quite serious. Okay, next question is, what was it that took them to that place? Whether there's someone at the top end of the scale or at the bottom, what was it that took them there? Was it a holiday? Was it a bereavement? Was it the loss of a job? Was it a snack at 10:30 in the morning? Have a think about that for a moment. And my third question is this, and it's worth reflecting on this for a moment. What would it take to put that same person to the other end? Like, what would you have to add or remove from their life to take them to that part? Now, if you're anything like me, I'm very interchangeable. Most people that know me, I can be extremely morose one minute, and the next can be as high as a kite. And that's not to do with taking any kind of chemical stuff. That's just basically the way I am. I tend to have a slightly bipolar existence. I can be really happy or really morose. But sometimes, you know, a bar of chocolate can make all the difference, or the Wi-Fi going out can make the difference. I wonder what it is for that person. And if you did it for yourself, I wonder what it would be for you. Okay, we're now on to, now let's have a think about what we're, the Bible passage we're looking, the passage we're looking at today, which is Matthew chapter 14, and it's the story of Jesus feeding the 5,000. This is the most famous miracle. The feeding of the 5,000 actually occurs in all four of the Gospels, so it stands as quite a unique miracle. It's recorded by each of the eyewitnesses, and there's a slight difference because that's what you get with eyewitnesses. And there are two other feeding miracles that occur in the Gospels as well, where a slightly different number of people are fed. So this miracle is something that most of us are quite familiar with. And what I'm going to try and do this morning is, or this evening, is go through this and try and link this back to our situation. So by the end of this sort of 10-15 minutes, however long I'm going to speak for, you can only live in hope, I would like you to think of how the story and what it means connects with how we are today, because it does connect, and it's really important. There are some really wonderful treasures to mine in this story. And as it affects us, I hope that whether you're someone who's like feels that life is giving you all that you would want, or whether you're someone who is completely occupied with how dark and depressing things are, I hope that something of this story will draw you into it and indicate to you something really wonderful. And here's my summary of the talk. So we'll start with the end and then we'll move through the details of the story. In Jesus, we have the secret of true contentment made public. The heavenly aroma has wafted down the ages and meets us exactly when we need him most. And I want to just take this illustration, before I even get into the story, I just want to take an illustration that's from my home. Maybe 15 years ago, I bought my wife, as a birthday present, I bought her a bread maker, and I make the bread with it. Now, at different times, that's been put in a cupboard for several years and not been used. But we've dug it out a few times, and just recently we dug it out again, have a bit more time to do some cooking these days. And there's a thing which is a family favourite, which is a spicy fruit loaf. And it involves fruit, and it's a normal white loaf, but it has cinnamon in it. Now, I made the mistake the other day of putting it on, and it takes 4 hours for this particular loaf to cook. I put it on at about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And we were just heading off to bed about 9 o'clock, 9:30. And of course, this thing goes off downstairs, and the entire house is filled with this incredible smell. Now, you may not like the smell, but to us, this is just an amazing thing. It's an amazing experience. And we're lying there in bed, and my wife is going, "This is doing my head in." And we had to get up, and well, I actually stayed in bed. I didn't really mind, but she had to get up and have some of it because it was just pulling her in. Now, in the same way that that smell was wafting through our house, I'd like you to think about this story and what it represents in a similar way. 2,000 years ago, Jesus did lots of things. He lived a certain life, and he died and rose from the dead and then ascended into heaven. And there's something about what he did that brought the secret of true contentment into the public sphere. And it was as if a heavenly aroma, something in the kitchen where the door has just slightly come ajar, and this waft has just entered our realm. And I'd like you to think about this story and what it represents, and how perhaps in your situation and friends around you, how does this waft, how does this heavenly aroma impact you now? Okay, having said that, let's get into the details of the story, because that's my introduction and I don't want to spend too long on that. So here's the text, Matthew 14, 13 to 21. To make it a bit more simple, I'm going to block out bits of text as we go. So let's start with the beginning. Starts off here. When Jesus heard what had happened, he withdrew by boat privately to a solitary place. Now this, we're back into our Matthew series. This links back to the story that Matt covered over New Year. And if you haven't seen the video for it, it's actually online on YouTube. It's really worth watching. We watched it as a family. It's very powerful. And it's basically the story of how John the Baptist is beheaded over an adulterous oath that King Herod makes at a party with guests, and he doesn't want to lose face, and John ends up being beheaded. And it's a pretty grim story. And it's really to do with how people behave how people relate to God, in that if God doesn't dance to their tune, then a beheading is, or some sort of execution, us cutting God off, is kind of a normal thing. And here we have the first line. When Jesus heard what had happened, when John was beheaded, he withdrew by boat privately to a solitary place. Now, this is Jesus focusing. This is him taking a much more serious approach. He's been involved in public ministry. He's been teaching. He's been doing lots of things. But when he hears this news, he withdraws, and he takes with him his disciples. And if we were to put this into entertainment terms, it would be something like this. John the Baptist is the warm-up act, and Jesus is the main show. And John the Baptist gets beheaded. And here's Jesus, and he knows he's going to follow that with his own execution. He is heading towards the cross. And so it creates an atmosphere. So what I'm trying to do is get into the feel of it. How did Jesus feel when he saw that John the Baptist, really the last Old Testament prophet, the greatest person who's ever lived, that's how he described him. This is how they responded to him. And here is the Son of God. And suddenly he knows that this is the heat is really on him. This is pretty much a pattern that he himself is going to step into. So he withdraws, and it's really about focusing on teaching his disciples and preparing for the coming kingdom. Hearing of this, the crowds follow him on foot from the towns. Now, there is something that's magnetic and irresistible about Jesus. And I was trying to think about, what is the mindset here? What was the thinking that was going on at this time? And The closest example I can give to this is during perhaps the worst part of the pandemic. I was working at the time as a high school teacher, and basically we're in a situation which felt like a contamination zone. We were with kids. It wasn't always that good to have that possible to have social distancing or ventilation. And it felt like this virus, which felt so threatening and so worrying, was going to get me. And I remember driving around Worthing to try and find some places where they were giving out vaccines. Now, maybe that sounds ridiculous, but I just had this sense of slight desperation. I remember being in the car one night thinking, you know, and calling friends of mine who are involved in the medical profession and getting through to one or two and saying to them, look, are there any spare vaccines going? And one person saying to me, well, actually, it is true that if you're at a clinic and you have that we have any spares, we usually do say, is there anyone you know? And he said, and a friend of mine said, actually, if we do have any spares, we'll get them to, we'll call you up and bring you along. And I remember the sense of desperation. And then you could book online. And I remember looking at the locations where you could go to get this vaccine, this thing that would somehow solve the frustration and the kind of mood, the cloud that was above me all the time at that stage. And as I was looking at the list of addresses, there was one that was like, it said there were some vaccine appointments that were available all the way out in Croydon, or out in Portsmouth or Southampton. And I remember considering at one point, is it worth uprooting my family and us getting in the car and driving across, taking a whole day out, most of a day out, to go and get this vaccine? Now, there's something similar going on here. Crowds see something in Jesus and they upheave their whole family. As you see later, there are whole families going here and they're going to remote places to try and find him. There is something of a desperation and a frustration and a magnetism about what Jesus brings to their situation. And there is something so compelling about him. So, you know, I know we've heard this story many times, but I just want you to try and think, what would it have been like to be one of those people traipsing out across the countryside, desperately trying to find this elusive character to try and have some connection to him? And here's the thing that's really fascinating. The crowds turn up and they meet Jesus. So here he is, he's on this boat, he's trying to get away because he needs to focus. He realizes that the heat is on and that he needs to really focus and bed down and really start to teach his disciples and really make sure that things are prepared for the kingdom. And as he turns up in his boat, there are thousands of people waiting for him. They've heard which direction he's going and they are waiting for him. Now, we've all been in this situation where perhaps we've not been particularly ready to give people attention. We've all perhaps been around people that maybe are slightly needy. I've certainly been in this situation many times as a high school teacher. And to my shame, I remember one time I had literally about 5 minutes. It was a really intense 6-period day. I literally didn't have 5 minutes to myself. And there was this 1 5-minute gap, which was break time, where I decided to just cram down some lunch and have a moment of just quiet alone in my classroom. And at that moment, a boy knocked on the door and said, "Are you busy?" Now, this is terrible. I'm going to just be really open and honest with you. This boy lost his father about 5 years before and was well known as being quite a needy child. And really, the ideal thing would be to say, yes, of course, come in, I'll give you time. But I just didn't have the time. And I knew that if I gave that few moments there, I would just be very out of sorts for the rest of the day. Now, here's the interesting thing. Notice I've done a little drawing of a cup with some liquid there. And here it's being pushed and you see the liquid all leaking out. Now, someone mentioned this a few years ago. They've said, you can often tell what's inside a person when you push them. So what's inside someone emerges when you push them, when they're in a stressful situation. And in this situation, Jesus is pushed. And what emerges? Well, it says here, when Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he didn't say, as I said in that situation, "I'm afraid I can't," and just backed off, or got back in the boat and just went somewhere else. It says he had compassion on them and healed their sick. Now, what we have revealed here in the Bible Now, you might just think, you may be a newcomer to Christianity, you may never have been to church before, you might be thinking, oh, it's just one of these sort of magical stories about this ancient guy. Well, if you read through the narrative of the Bible, particularly Matthew's Gospel, the picture you get is that the God, the invisible God from beyond, who has always existed, who existed before anything was created, who is a trinity of three persons, a deep, deep mystery, creates the universe by speaking, and then the universe, the earth particularly, gets into trouble because of the fall with Adam and Eve, and then taking a fruit and the human race falling into sin. This God has stepped into human flesh, and this God has now appeared as a 30-odd-year-old man, Jesus, and he's here, and this God is now making himself known to people. Now, what's inside this God? Who is this God? What is this God like? What is his character? What is his nature? Well, when we push him here in this situation, this extreme situation, we see what he's made of. Not impatience, not frustration, not get out of the way, just give me my private time. But he pours out of compassion. And God is described as being love. He is the definition of love, this absolute personal being. Is love all that he is? He's many things, but he is love essentially. If you reduce God down to his very simplest qualities, he is a person. He is three persons who is love. He defines everything that is loving. And here you see another example of him pushed, and what comes out? It's love, deep compassion for this crowd, and he begins to heal them. And then that carries on for some time, and we then get to the evening. So as evening approaches, the disciples come to him and say, "This is a remote place, it's getting late. Send the crowds away so they can go to the villages and buy themselves some food." And I've done some maths there, some visual maths. There's the five, and later on they say, "We only have 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. So they realise they haven't really got much with them, and this crowd are going to get hungry. It's probably better to just send them off. And then if we have more time with them later, we can. But let's just send them off, Jesus." And the maths are a small boy's lunchbox of 5 barley loaves and 2 small fish won't go thousands and thousands. It just won't work. But get this, in this verse here, Jesus replies, "They do not need to go away. You give them something to eat." Now, what's interesting here is it's written as a command. He's saying they don't need to go away. You give them something to eat. Now, they say, "We've only got this tiny lunch thing, that we just don't have the resources." And here we find ourselves in a situation that's very similar with anybody who's involved in the Christian church. Anyone who knows about Jesus, anyone who follows him, there is something similar going on here in this parable that applies to our lives now. For those of us who are involved in the church community, and in fact in the local community, any of us who are taking any sort of time with other people in their lives, one of the things that becomes quite patently obvious at times is that people have great, great needs. The moment you scratch the surface of human needs, and we've seen a lot of it with the pandemic, a very frustrating situation, lots of those needs that previously were just kind of under the surface have actually erupted. There's lots of anger, lots of frustration, lots of sorrow, lots of sadness. And we see that being played out in the news a lot of the time. And anyone who gets involved in caring for other people, at some point you'll realise, as most of you sat here do, that there just is no way of being able to fully help people. At some point you're going to hit your limits. Now, people who say, "It's fine, the world is fine, these people can cope," these are usually the people who aren't that involved. It's only when you emotionally get involved with others that you do come to an end in yourself and you realise there isn't really finally much that you can do to fix people. The problem is vast. It's just an endless hole just going off. And as much as you pour into it, it will just end up expending you. And this is where the disciples are here. They're facing this issue here. But Jesus says to them, "They do not need to go away. You give them something to eat." Now, straight away, that is an impossible thing. They cannot feed this massive crowd. Now, notice here I've put 15,000. I know the parable says the feeding of the 5,000, but later on you see it says there were 5,000 men besides women and children. So people who have studied this passage and have studied the New Testament in commentaries that I've read, they would claim that there are a lot more people here than 5,000. So once you add in lots of women and children, because it's a patriarchal society, they would number it according to the number of men that were there. So there's a lot more. Some people reckon there's as many as 20,000. But I'm going to go for 15 here because it's just such a huge number anyway. And here's this tiny lunchbox. What is Jesus going to do? What does he mean, you give them something to eat? Well, he's not just putting them into some weird kind of crisis mode. He's basically going to show them, he's going to reveal something which we can take from this situation ourselves. And if you already know this, then just bear with it, because it's just really fantastic and it's worth being reminded of this today. He says this, "Bring them here to me." He directed the people to sit down on the grass. Now, this is interesting. This is a really fascinating detail here. They are not being given a quick snack. The idea of sitting down or reclining, there's this sense that he is about to provide a banquet. He's not just going to hand something quickly round and just send them off. This is a sense of community gelling and bonding. And there is something about the Christian community which is we come to Jesus, but we come to Jesus and recline. We sit together. We become part of each other's lives. And the Christian faith is not simply a private thing where you just read a Bible or you go to a meeting and then you go home and sit in your tiny little kind of cubicle. And then you have your own private thoughts with God. It's very much, the identity of Christianity is very much a communal identity. And those of you who are at Maybridge, hopefully you have enjoyed some of this. And certainly, it's a wonderful thing. Many of us are in very busy jobs where it's difficult to feel this a lot of the time. But those of us who are able to really be part of each other's lives, there is something really wonderful. And here we're being echoed here. Jesus could have sent them off, but instead he took a time of compassion and healing, and it's as if this becomes the richest part of it. Having been refreshed in his presence, they're now being brought together and being refreshed together, and there's something that's being created here which would have had a lasting effect. He directed the people to sit down on the grass, taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish and looking up to heaven, so a traditional giving of thanks. He gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to the disciples, and the disciples gave them to the people. So when he says earlier, they don't need to go away, you give them something to eat. The reason why he's saying that is because he is present. And here is something which is really, really valuable for anybody involved in Christian ministry to know. Now, you may not be involved in serving in the church, but anybody who's involved in the church, serving in some sort of way, just let's pause here for a moment and just remind ourselves of something really, really brilliant. We in ourselves have no resources, well, very little resources. There's very little we can do. Maybe you've got a good personality or a good talent. Maybe you've got a nice house. But really, at the end of the day, there isn't much we can offer. The needs of the world are great. And here, Jesus is telling them to come to him, bring people to him, and give out the things that he is giving. In other words, we go to the door of the master chef himself. And he provides the resources. Now, what resources does Jesus provide? So for those of us who are involved in youth work in the church, those of us who are involved in serving in a cafe or visiting people, or those of us who are just simply having a conversation and caring for others at work, for those of us who are trying to raise families or care for our spouse or whatever it is we do, being a good neighbour, what are the resources that this master chef gives us? Well, it's complex and it's simple. Simply, Jesus has given us himself. When he died on the cross and rose from the dead, he was providing us a place, an adoptive place within the family of God. He was giving us a new nature. He was giving us redemption. He was buying us back to God. He was buying us into the heart of God. He was clothing us in his own righteousness and his purity. He was giving us a new hope, a confidence to deal with our own lack of self-esteem, a God self-esteem, a sense of who we are, a privileged member of the loving family of God, being swept and forgiven and clean, giving us power to care for others and to move on from bitterness. He's giving us resources of a new spiritual life, a life that will stretch off into eternity. And these resources, which are given to us by faith, by his word, are the resources he's giving us. So in that situation, with the giving of the 5,000, giving the loaves to the group of 5 to 15,000 people, that's a picture of what he's doing now. And here we are as Christians. Now, when you're faced with frustrations and you're faced with perhaps a dwindling congregation, or maybe you think that the Christian message isn't spicy enough for other people, we have to come back to this point. Let's just simply take what the master chef is giving and let's give that to others. It's really, really important. And as we do that in faith, not resorting to special kind of methods or fancy gimmicks or, you know, big name speakers or, you know, whatever kind of knickknacks you can just add into the mix. Let's just get back to what the master chef is giving us. And that is, he's giving us this new relationship, and he's pouring out his spirit on people, and he's saying, come to me. And here it says, he gave them to the disciples, and the disciples gave them to the people. And that is simply the chain. That's the way it works. And you and I, as a basic disciple living in the year 2022, we take from the master and we give to others. You know, I don't have much to offer you, you say. I can give you Jesus. I can tell you all about my Saviour, and he is amazing. Let me give you all that he's given me, and that will be enough. That will be nourishing. It brings us to the end. They all ate and were satisfied. And the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over. The number of those who ate was about 5,000 men, besides women and children. We see the door of heaven open, and briefly, an aroma wafts out. It's as if everyone who was there at that event, they would have seen healing. And then at this point, with this incredible, miraculous event where he multiplies a tiny lunchbox for all these people, there is this moment where it catches them and it shows them something really wonderful. It gives them a glimpse of something which is waiting for all of us in the future. Now, I'll just read my sentence again before I finish. In Jesus, we have the secret of true contentment made public. The heavenly aroma has wafted down the ages and meets us exactly when we need him most. Now, whether you are someone who's fully contented or utterly bereft, this is Jesus. He is the most important thing. He is the one. He offers us something which is way more than just simply a better menu item. And this is really important that we understand this. We don't come to Jesus because he's better than going to the gym or the cinema. We don't come to Jesus because, you know, he's better than having a boyfriend or better than having a job because it's more job satisfaction because we go to church and it feels more spiritual. There's more to it going on than that. What Jesus does is he completely transforms us. He gives us new birth, new life, and he leads us into a new family. And with that, I just want to finish and show you this line that's from the letter to the Philippians. There's a place called Philippi, and Paul, who's one of the early church leaders who wrote a large chunk of the New Testament, he says this in Philippians chapter 4. He said this, I have learned to be content whatever the circumstances, whether bereft or full of joy. I know what it is to be in need. I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do all this through him who gives me strength. Paul had a personal relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ. And because of that relationship, he was transformed from whatever he was before into a new being. He had a new identity. And Jesus calls all of us into this new identity. Not to an extra activity which you might have done other things, but now you just go to church. We're talking about a new life in Christ. And that is what we offer you this morning. Well, I hope there's something really helpful and encouraging for you there in Matthew 14. And I hope that whatever circumstances you find yourself in, that the waft of heaven and this heavenly banquet that awaits us when we fully meet Jesus in heaven, that something of the nourishment of it now in this world will meet you and meet your needs by his Spirit.